Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 179, recorded December 8th, 2014. Oren Jacob of Toy Talk. Triangulation is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/triangulation. And by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. To get started, visit smartthings.com/twit and you'll save 10% off any home security or solution kit when you use the code TWIT10 at checkout. It's time for Triangulation. This is the show where we talk to some of the most interesting people in technology, see what they're up to, learn some things. This is going to be fun. I've been looking forward to this for some time. Oren Jacob is here from Toy Talk. He's the CEO of Toy Talk. But even more, before that, former CTO at Pixar. You were an animator there. Welcome, Oren. It's great to have you on
Triangulation. Thank you, Leo. Great to be here.
And if I had known you were in studio, man, I would have brought some toys for your daughter. You saw Luxo Jr., the first Pixar short, right?
I saw it in high school. Many years ago, there was an animation festival called the Mike and Spike Festival that would tour around.
Loved that.
Right?
Used to go to that every year. Yeah.
Yep.
Was where you saw Luxo.
Saw Luxo playing at, I think it was Crawford Hall, which is the basketball arena at UCI. I grew up in Irvine.
Right.
And as a credit crawl went by at the end of Luxo, it says Pixar, and I think all it said was Marin County, California.
Yeah.
And then a special thanks to Lucasfilm. And it stuck with me, and I thought somehow those things probably are connected.
Because you were a Star Wars geek, too.
Sure. My mom woke me up to camp out for Empire on sleeping bags in front of the Newport theaters at Fashion Island. I still have my kids, too. So it's like 3 in the morning. She woke up Donnie and I, and we end up on sleeping bags and in the sprinklers or whatever. And
I love your mom.
And the sun comes up. We're like, what the heck are we doing here, Mom? Like, it's a school day. It's the opening of Empire.
So she was a fan.
Like, what Empire? What? Empire Strikes
Empire.
Back.
Empire.
What? And then I was the kid who's, 9 a.m. the screening on that Friday morning. I come back. It was in May. So I got the...
But you didn't see that and say, I want to animate Jar Jar Binks.
No, clearly not. No, I think most people probably didn't. But I was a kid who came back to class and knew with the dentist's office note and then walked in and said, I'm sorry, I was late to school with the dentist. And Vader's his father!
I'm
so sorry to everybody.
And, you learned early on that spoilers...
I was that guy. That was not a good guy to be. Anyway, he was a big Star Wars fan, obviously, as most people in that generation or our generation were.
Yeah.
But then saw Luxo Jr. with that in the credit crawl. And this sort of guess that Lucasfilm and Pixar were somehow related. Turns out they're quite related, as we all know now. But it's noted that, and then...
This is pre-Steve Jobs. This is when it was a division of Lucas, or...?
No, at that point in time, Steve had already purchased it.
He'd already bought
Luxo
it.
Was released when Steve was the CEO of the company. So yes, it already separated from Lucasfilm.
Lucas has started Pixar as really a tool division, as I remember, wasn't it? Or
yeah, he hired Ed came to work for
Ed
George,
Catmull, right?
And once Ed was there, then he brought in some of the team who are still there today at Pixar. Right. I think how that.
But George tired of it, as happens.
Yeah, I think there were some. I don't quite understand the financial situation in the mid '80s in Lucasfilm, because that was post Jedi, but pre Phantom Menace,
right?
And you're in the Howard the Duck phase there.
There was a bad period.
So there was a low point. That could have been complicated, perhaps at that time. I guess that he wanted to sell the division off, and
Steve picked it up at a fire sale price.
Yes, he did, and got the team, the software, and the folks. An interesting side note is that I believe it worked because they were all intermingled in the Kerner buildings, which I drove by this morning coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the folks who went with the Pixar sale got to keep the stuff in their office. Because, you're in the same building. So, office one stayed at Lucasfilm, office two went to Pixar, three went to four different in the ABCD buildings in Kerner. And many years later, one of the guys who I think is still there, been there for many years, named Neftali, was a model builder. back in Empire and Jedi, and it came to do computer system repairs. And so I walked into his office as an intern when I started in 1990, and I see, like, an X-Wing, a Y-Wing, an actual Falcon, and, like, an Imperial Star Destroyer, like the Carillion-sized ship, which in miniature phase is like an 8-foot miniature.
Right.
Sitting on a shelf.
Right.
I'm like, holy cow. What's that about? Oh, well, I used to be a model builder back in the day,
wow.
And I got the... Are you kidding me? That's the real...
That's the one.
For reals.
And they had the motorized camera go underneath it to make it look like it's coming...
Right. Super cool. So anyway, that was
so
me actually, you know, touch an actual miniature for
real. That is pretty cool.
Anyway, so I started in 1990 at Pixar as an intern my freshman year at Cal and worked there for 20 years.
Interesting. So you didn't study graphic design or, I mean, you kind of learned as you, at work.
Yeah, I was actually a mechanical engineer by degree. I got
mechanical engineer?
Yeah, of all unusual things.
Yeah.
Which was applicable in a meeting in my life, which was talking about fluid dynamics for splashing water on Nemo. So
you need to know that stuff.
I threw out some Navier-Stokes equations then, and that was useful for that particular agenda. But I was studying engineering at Cal and got an internship at Pixar, and then just stayed because I learned my computer graphics and filmmaking there.
What a way to learn!
Yeah, that was a very special opportunity. So
yeah.
Once I got that internship, I didn't let it go.
No,
as much as the company was not the one we know today as a film studio. Back then, it was still a Steve Jobs-funded hardware and software startup that was selling Pixar Image Computers, which
right.
were $250,000 washing machine-sized boxes.
Right. It was about tools.
Yep, they were selling... RenderMan was already being sold, so that mm-hmm. Which is still sold today by Pixar. the short films, I think, were mostly done. I mean, I know John and Ed wanted to make a full-length animated feature, but they were exploring that agenda as a way to really test the hardware and the software and show off what they could do. And
what's interesting about John Lasseter is he's such an adept storyteller.
Yes.
That you feel like, well, that must be what he was always there to do.
You don't come across a generational talent like that very often.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a spectacular.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
Storyteller and leader of that studio.
Yeah.
Say.
Yep. Yeah. So, okay, I'm sorry. We're going to talk about Speak of Legend, I promise.
Yeah, I'll get that. We got a whole hour to spend.
We got an hour.
Yeah.
I can't leave this alone. So, you worked at Pixar. What was the first thing you worked on?
When I very first started, I was a software quality assurance intern.
So, you were a software designer and tester, really.
Yeah, Pixar was trying to get into the desktop 3D market that was going to be huge next year, which never was.
Someday.
And had a product that was eventually called Finishing Touch, and Typistry came out.
Wow, yeah.
That was sort of like do you remember Print Shop?
Mm-hmm. Broderbund.
There you go, right. So Print Shop for 3D logos on your desktop.
Right.
Was the
cool.
thing. Right, which you can make with Tetris and granite.
Yeah.
So my job was to try to break that and then report bugs back to the engineering staff in the summer of 1990.
Good job out of school.
In winter of 91, Pixar reduced staff, and Steve sold off the hardware group at the point we moved to Point Richmond, and then the software group was shed, and we became the beginning of the animation company that Pixar now is.
We've got these tools. So, let's start just using them.
Right. And
at first, it was just a demo. Now, let's do something with it.
And that.
But you were doing commercials at first.
Right. So there was a Tropicana TV commercial of a straw chasing an orange, then a bunch of Listerine commercials. Listerine Jungle, Listerine Boxer. I worked on Listerine Arrows, which won a Clio in 93 or 94, whatever that was. Listening to this Robin Hood.
What was the state of the art of animation? Here's Listerine Arrows. If people want to.
Oh, you pulled that up.
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
This is cool. I apologize that this is the YouTube version, so I think it's pretty low res. But
wow, holy, that's 20 years ago, Batman.
You get a sense, but so. Was this hard to do in 1991?
What you're seeing here is Pixar's first instance of rendered NURBS with trim curves on the leaves.
Interesting.
Was the first one actually made it out of the building.
Yeah.
Those were then widely deployed across Toy Story and the neighborhood sequences.
What are go ahead. What are NURBS?
We're trying to kill that nerdy.
Hey, NURBS. What are NURBS?
A non-uniform rational beast line.
Yeah.
NURB.
Yeah.
So
I think people who are watching know that that you have polygons in a game.
Right.
You'll have polygons, actually often triangles. Right.
Is
this like a better kind of polygon?
Use a curve like that to define the outline of a shape, and then mm-hmm. you may triangulate it
within it
to render it.
Yeah.
In the case of a trim curve, a NURB patch is often rectangular, rectilinear. Yeah. And you can't make a leaf out of rectangles. Leaf has a shape like an oak leaf.
Yeah.
So you make the rectangle very simply, and then in the space of the rectangle, define the maple leaf shape. You trim away the part that's outside.
Interesting.
So in 1983 or 94, whenever that was.
That was pretty advanced.
To actually get that into production and...
If you've used Illustrator, you've done similar.
Very, almost certainly.
Yeah.
Yes. In some way. But at that point, to render that footage...
So this is hard to do.
You know, 100,000, 200,000 leaves per shot in the background there, all wiggling a little bit in the background.
And of course, people watching this in the middle of their Happy Days reruns probably aren't noticing that.
No, but I sure did.
Animation folks are going, wait a minute, look at those leaves.
You all see in the bottle, the serene, the liquid there on top as well.
It's sloshing.
First instance of that and of what, I don't know, 15 years later becomes the reflection and refraction in
look
the Nemo
that.
Fish tank.
Interesting.
So in the dentist's office in Nemo,
yep.
When you see all the fish swim around,
yep.
If you're... The camera's in the tank shooting out.
Right.
Kind of like here, we're sitting at a table here.
Right.
If you're filming the folks in the waiting room of the dentist or the other side filming Darla, anyway, she's getting her teeth worked on by the dentist, or Darla's looking into the tank. In both cases, you're crossing the glass water barrier.
Yeah.
And so you have to distort that the right way.
Yeah.
Which is complicated optically to get right, at least back in 2003.
Right.
But
this is 94, the Listerine commercial. Is this done on a Mac or a render farm of Macs?
No, that was the era of Silicon Graphics.
SGI.
So Sun machines were dominant when I started in 1990, 91.
Yeah.
SGI machines took over. And
so these are like 20 Onyxes working on this? Or?
Yeah, there were, I forget all the product name, Indigos,
yeah, they all
Irises.
Were colors. Yeah.
Yeah, right, all the purple color.
Yeah.
Purple, there we
Purples.
Go. That was not intentional, but... yeah, there were all SGI machines back in the day, used for Toy Story production. And then I think somewhere by 2000, the studio had gone basically to Linux boxes on commodity hardware.
Right.
Which are, you know, Dell, whoever
right.
supplied them as well. That's what
right.
they, you know, use today. So
I was animated on an Silicon Graphics Onyx.
There you
when
go.
When I was Dev Null. And the guy you were talking to, Karsten, he was the guy who spins my hair. I had to wear a bodysuit backstage. This was on MSNBC. So right about the same time as this. But that was real time, which is a little bit harder to do.
Yeah, very different.
Wow. Fun to see that Listerine commercial again.
Yeah, way to pull that out of the Wayback Machine. I don't know where to go there this morning.
So then you start doing features. Which Toy Story was the first feature for Pixar.
Yeah.
And man, when we saw Toy Story, that was like, wow. Amazing. And what did you do on that?
I did a little bit of the shading on Sid's backpack. So I had to place the nasty notes he wrote to his sister all over his backpack. More notably,
yeah,
I did the...
when people say that, you're not sitting there with pencil and paper and illustrating that. How are you doing that? You do it on a computer?
So I think it was that Tia had painted the scribbles in Photoshop.
Right.
So I get TIFF files from her. I had to place and locate them on the backpack model.
So you're almost modeling that 2D thing onto a 3D shape.
This is a memory trip here. I think that Rick had done the model or the rigging of that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then my job was to get the canvas shading to bind to the backpack and then place the tattoos on them. That was a couple weeks of work. But that's most of my time in the neighborhood sequence at the end, which is what we call T-38, with the chase sequence in Toy Story. So it's Buzz and Woody trying to get back to Andy's minivan across that whenever 100, 200 shots in the chase sequence at the end. And in particular, I did the rocket's contrail effects. So when they light the rocket on Buzz's back and Buzz goes...
Oh, I love that.
...takes off and the exhaust contrail comes out. That was my rocket exhaust, which I'm pleased to brag about because my dad was actually a capsule engineer from Mercury and Gemini back in the day. So he got to work on real rockets, and I got
no
to work
kidding.
On animated rocket exhausts instead. So there's rockets in the family, but
how cool.
Very different agendas. Yeah. So
that's really cool.
I actually got to take, he has a 8mm silent footage of Cape Canaveral, which they filmed on the various launches.
Do you remember, do you have memory of that? You were too young for Mercury.
No, I was born in 71, so that's
yeah,
before
you missed
my
all
time,
for
Gemini
yeah.
Mercury. But yeah. he had the 8mm black and white in color
neat.
In the garage. So we got an 8mm projector, wired neat. It up, for Toy Story and projected to go like look at what.
So you actually used his footage to inspire your
generationally
animation.
Brought that into the film, which was quite fun to do.
That is
so
pretty neat.
It's kind of cool. So yeah, that was fun.
This is pirated, I'm sure, but this is the rendering of the beginning, very famous opening shot of Bug's Life, which you did. How long is that?
It's 1,472 frames.
1,472.
Which is
so you divide by 24.
Right, you'll get the right math out.
Is it right at the beginning here?
Yes, it is the first shot.
So
there you go. Starting.
Yeah, apologize on the quality.
Actually, a reflection that's going to ripple.
Yeah.
Wait for it. Leaf hits. Oh, ripple.
Oh, look at that.
Pitch up.
Some of this, when you do stuff like this, is a little bit of like, let's just show you what we can do, right?
This shot, we're kind of flexing our muscles a little bit at a time, yeah. And now we're going to just slowly.
But what a good way to start a movie. Like, get ready.
Right.
I mean, that's what Lucas did with Star Wars, right? Get ready. You thought that was the ship? No. Yeah. That's not the ship. This is the ship. So it is a little bit of a tribute to episode 4.
And here you're going into the grass. It's all moving in the wind. And all the plants. There's a couple dandelions.
How long did this shot take?
It's a minute and change if I do the math right
in
my head.
How long did it take to make? I wish the quality were better. I apologize. Go home and get your Blu-ray.
We're not done yet now. And there's the first ant. Rack focus. That was brutal. It's coming up here. Wait for the rack. And there you go.
There we go.
All right.
Now, in a camera, that's easy.
Yeah, it's a freebie for you guys. You just dial. No, we bleed
How
that.
Hard is that to do?
Well, this is back in 97, 98, so that's different than it is today. But in this particular case, it was difficult to sort out because you actually have to render the final frames to understand if your rack focus was as intended. Did you rack too fast, rack too slow?
So you're changing the plane of focus from the ant dramatically, from the ant on the stalk to the background stalks. And it's not as simple just like draw that frame, then the next frame, then the next frame, then the next frame. Or is it? I mean,
if you had real-time graphics feedback, it'd be take you 4 seconds to align it, but you don't. So in this case, you have to guess at the camera parameters of f-stop and focal distance and then render it and give it a go and see. Now, again, that shot took a weekend to compute once. So it means I only got like 4 swings at bat across the summer to do that.
Right.
So the way you work that.
You try it, then you see what it looks like.
What you actually do is you mow the grass out and kill the tree. So you get rid of almost everything but like 6 blades of grass that have the ants on them, and that you can render much faster.
Mm-hmm.
Give that a go, hope it works out correct, pile the rest of stuff back in the shot.
Using the same numbers.
Yes, yeah, and then compute it for real. At that time, because that would take over the entire Pixar render farm for like 2.5 days to compute it once.
Nobody can do anything.
No, that's why I got the weekends. So, like, you, the film crew, get Monday through Friday.
Sorry.
I got Saturday and Sunday, and I had to schedule that. And that's a significant enough chunk of the total available compute for the film that if that was not organized properly, you could affect what I call real delivery deadlines.
Right.
So you have 5, 6, 7 reels, which is, you know, 5 minutes of the film, have to come out as a continuous segment to go into post, to do music and the rest.
Yeah.
And if I, like, absconded with the render farm for, like, 5 calendar days, that's when you only have 30 left in the production. You can't do that. So, that's not okay.
Not good.
Is it very carefully orchestrated?
But don't they kind of, I mean, they have a big Gantt chart and they know, or do they? It's all in the script, isn't it, ahead of time?
By that point, you're in a late spring, early summer of 98, and the film is due out in post-production through summer and fall. It's coming out and release, you know, in November, whatever it is. The reel that includes that shot has to be placed properly in the order based on all the inventory flow issues of who's animating, who's doing effects, who's lighting, all the rest of the stuff, too. Oh, we got to render B11. Oh, okay. What's that about? Well, it's going to take like several weekends to compute.
Oh, crap.
Oops. Put that in August or whatever.
So, right.
Yeah.
Move it around. Yeah.
Yes, that's
your,
around.
That's your critical path.
If your audience wants to get especially nerdy for a second here.
Oh, I think they do.
Okay. The compute of that camera move and the scale of that shot actually ran up against single precision floating point error.
At the time,
so we had to rebuild the camera matrix stack in double precision. Specifically for that camera move, and in particular at the end of the move when you're coming at the ant, there's just a gentle rotate to the right, and that azimuth change would ratchet. So the first three computes back, we're like watching the shot, we got it back, and the camera pitches up from the puddle. We're moving in toward the tree. Those are a big move as you're going in meters of space, you know, across that landscape. But as you're settling down to the ant, You watch the tree kind of move a little bit to the left, and it would do this. Watch
it. Would jump.
Dunk, dunk, dunk.
And that's because you don't have enough precision.
We were at the single precision floating point accuracy of the matrix math, and it's because you have to invert a camera matrix in there. So if you do matrix inversion, those of you in the audience that want that, you'll get that. So not yet. Watch the tree in particular.
See, now you're going to ruin it for
So now the right side of the tree is moving toward the left now.
Yeah.
See, the camera's going just a bit to the right.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we're going to adjust just gently. And the tree's going smooth. It's going smoothly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
We're coming to the ant now.
Nobody's looking at the tree at that point, so it's okay.
But that tree was ratcheting in the background. It was actually single precision floating point error resolution of
what is that? What is that? 16 million? What is that?
16.7 million.
So you have what? NURBS? What? 16.7 million what?
No, points? It is the sort of accuracy represented by that.
So you needed more than 16.7 million.
Went to 32-bit. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Maybe 64-bit. Whatever it was.
I found a Blu-ray.
This is
a Blu-ray copy of it, so we can run through it once more, and then we're going to continue in a bit with Oren Jacob. Finding Nemo. You worked on that. Chief technical?
I was the supervising technical director.
Technical director.
Oh, here, you get the proper
Finally got a good quality version up for you.
In 239.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Widescreen all the way.
Not merely 16.9, my friends. No. No, we got... Look at the specular highlights on this, and you think, I'm looking at the sky, and no, it's water. Hard to do that water? Is that hard to do?
That particular one was relatively easy, because we didn't have a splash happening. It was simply a ripple.
Yeah.
Ripple is the right thing to reach for in 98. So we'll splash water in...
Splashes later.
In 03, in Nemo. I hear they're trying to find Dory now. So
and
I'm
you
sure
chose
they're...
ants because there's no fur, right?
That was 2 years later.
Couldn't
years
do
later
fur.
We'll get to Sullivan next. Yeah.
This is and you know, I'm glad to do this with you because I want people to appreciate this. Don't you think?
The fine-grained detail of Bugs Life.
Well, I just want them to, look, you know what? It's great. You go see the movie. You love the movie. It's a wonderful story. You get engrossed in it the first time you see it, the second time you see it. But it's nice to come back, sit back, and look at what is technically going on here.
That's a nicer version, yes.
Much better. Go. We'll see the rack focus much better here.
Drops the... look at that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's just a couple of frames. How many frames? 4 frames? 5 frames?
Oh, the rack focus, I think, was about a second or two. That's probably 20 to 30 frames across the rack, yeah. Okay. Yep.
Oh.
Anyway.
So much fun to see it again.
Oh, here we got a Matissa has 6 digits of precision. The exponent can go as high as 10 to 28. Okay. We're getting some of the folks in the chat room jumping in.
These guys are smarter than you think.
Yeah. Thank you for the help from the crowd there. Okay.
Whatever that means, it's Dr. Morbius. I think he works in animation. The Matissa has 6 digits of precision. The exponent can go as high as 10 to the 28th.
How many of us lucky to get finished? Okay, we can get involved in that for a long time. Yeah. Okay. Moving on.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. This is fun. And speak a legend, because we're going to talk about your current stuff, which is really cool, bringing this to the iPad. In fact, it was an iPad app cap I did a couple of weeks ago. And coincidentally, because I didn't know you were coming in, we get to talk about it. That's awesome. Our show today brought to you by the folks at Prosper. What a great idea. Peer-to-peer lending. Taking the world by storm, the idea is, instead of going to a bank, hat in hand, you got to put on a suit and tie, and pants. What Prosper does is it brings people with money to lend together with people who need to borrow money, and it's a friction-free process, and I want you to try it right now at prosper.com/twit. What would you do if you could borrow $35,000 in as few as 5 days? And use the money for just about anything you want. Pay off high-rate credit cards. This time of year, this is a really good thing. Fix up your house for the holidays. Put that money into a new business or polish up your old business. It's hard to borrow money these days, but with low fixed-rate loans from Prosper.com, it's easy. You can go right there right now without affecting your good credit and get a rate at Prosper.com/Twit. Fabulous idea. Silicon Valley's answer to the big bank loan. And for a limited time, Prosper's offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. That's kind of nice, just in time for the holidays. Prosper.com/Twit. Up to $35,000 in just 5 days and a $50 Visa prepaid card. Go to Prosper.com/Twit right now. Get your quote. Our guest, Oren Jacob, is the CEO of Toy Talk. Toy Story, Toy Talk, that was not an accident. That was not an accident. But are you still, you're not still at Pixar, though?
No, no, I left Pixar in the winter of 11.
Do you miss working on movies, or that's got to be a young man's, because you don't have a life if you're doing that, right?
I still have many great friends at Pixar and love the place very much. I wanted to work outside of film, and Pixar makes film, and it's the best place in the world to make film.
Well, so, you get in.
Well, you okay there?
I'm trying to get my, there, I got my wire out so I can.
Wow.
I could connect here. You get in film, you get to make beautiful images and tell stories. But nowadays, we have these mediums like the iPad that are kind of begging for those kinds of skills in a more personal medium. So I could see how somebody who's done that on the big screen would like to do it on the little screen.
Well, you know, the idea behind Toy Talk is to build characters in conversation with an audience directly.
And which is why, that's the other thing, you're breaking the fourth wall, you're actually
right,
talking.
Right, can really do that or not.
Yeah.
And, having worked in computer graphics and storytelling for 20 years at Pixar and loved every minute doing that as well, too, I was sort of possessed by this moment with my daughter. You know, I mentioned Toby's now 10. She, I guess, was seven, early 7 years old then, back in the spring of 11. And whatever iPhone version was out then, I don't know, iPhones 2 or 3, whatever it was, we were running Skype, and she was Skyping with Grandma down in Southern California.
Yeah.
Goes off the Skype call, says, bye, Grandma, bye, and hangs up the Skype call, and then kind of looks at me, and we're in the playroom downstairs in her house, and turns over to the pile of plush toys and stuff on the side of the playroom and says, Dad, can I use this to talk to them? And I was like, well,
Bing, did a light go off?
It was a very direct question from a seven-year-old.
Yeah.
Martin and I were talking about doing some other, you know, other ideas at the time, but I mentioned to him that evening on our phone call I had with him, and a week or two later, we kind of came back to the question. I was like, what was she really asking there? Was, can she Skype with her teddy bear? Can she Skype with, you know, that American Girl doll, that you know, Vader, that Sammy owns, whatever it was?
Kids have always done that. I mean, I remember my daughter talking to her American Girl doll, talking to her teddy
right.
bears. They imagine the answer. There is an interaction going on, but maybe you could make that more vivid.
Maybe we could actually do that.
Maybe you could actually do it.
So that summer of 11, when Martin and I sat down and began thinking about what became Toy Talk for real, we sort of asked ourselves, is that actually possible to do today?
Right.
Maybe.
You're talking about Martin Reddy, by the way.
Yes, Martin Reddy, my co-founder and CTO, yeah. And is it possible to do in 2011 starting a company to do that? And if it is, what would happen to the world if we did that?
Yeah.
And we actually didn't know the answer to either one of those questions.
So at Pixar, you had, even from the beginning, worked with tools, and yet at the end, you were director of studio tools.
Yeah.
So you can't use the same tools, right?
No, not at all.
So you have to develop new tools? How does this work?
Yeah, so when we pulled together Toy Talk, and two of us became six by the fall of 2011, so mm-hmm. now we're a small group. Hiding in Renee's living room in San Francisco, and then eventually got our barn south of Markets where we are now. We went out to go look for tools one would use
right.
to create a character in conversation, and those don't exist.
I don't think so. Yeah.
No, not so much. You can't buy them from Adobe or Microsoft or anybody else. So we dug deeper and, okay, I guess we're building a tool set to author conversation, which we now have. And we call
right.
that tool set Pullstring, as the pulsing of a marionette puppet would be. And that is sort of a combination of Microsoft Word, a little Google search, a chat bot, an AI engine, and a hierarchy browser had a baby, if that makes sense to anybody out there.
But those are all the tasks that you have to, things you need to do.
Right, you need to write. So
yeah,
Word. What would a character say? You need to see what would be said back to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a chat bot does.
Mm-hmm.
That character, the character you're authoring, has to decide what to say back. That's the AI engine part.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go find all the stuff that I've written before to keep working on it. That's sort of Google searchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to construct the conversation in some way.
This is non-trivial. Just the chatbot stuff. I mean, we've seen Eliza and lots of these kind of primitive artificial intelligences, and they're kind of dopey.
You
had to reinvent that?
Yes, to a certain degree, although, you know, one part of our tool set is grounded in that place, but it also has a lot of the complicated sort of concepts you get today from natural language processing in general understanding.
Yeah, we know a little more. We're better at this.
Synonyms and homophones and antonyms,
Cortana, they all can kind of talk to you.
Yeah, I actually was at a conference with just a few weeks ago. A company, WitAI, I think, put together a conference that had Adam Shire, who was one of the founders of Siri. Today he runs a company called Viv. The head of Cortana was there. The head of Google Now was there. The ex-previous CEO of Nuance was there, all talking about synthetic personality.
Interesting.
And what that means.
Yeah.
So in mobile search, you see Siri and Cortana and Google Now are all very present today. Toy Talk showed up at the conference, and we gave a talk about actual personality.
I bet they loved that.
We were sort of the odd bird out, perhaps, in a little bit. Maybe not that.
But you're in a challenging space, because they're somewhat constrained. The kinds of things they do, they intentionally limit. Right. It's a constrained vocabulary they're dealing with. It's a constrained results that they can give you. And, I mean, you have some constraints as well. Obviously, you have to. You can't be completely general.
Right.
But I think you're dealing with a much more challenging set of problems, aren't you?
Thank you for that. I guess I would characterize it as certainly a different set of challenges to the extent that...
Yeah, but you can't predict what a kid's going to do.
But let's give credit to, like, I'll talk about Google for a second. You put in Google Maps, you're like, I want a restaurant.
It's impressive.
Like, what kind of restaurant do you want?
Yeah.
Sushi, where? Petaluma.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So, but again, it's a fairly constrained space that they're working in.
Well, certainly when you talk about, you know, a seven-year-old playing with their toys, they will say anything. Mm-hmm. So we do get back, even playing with us digitally, we'll get back a lot of stuff.
Right.
We actually were invited to a Thanksgiving dinner, and they brought an iPad over, set it up. This is last year with the Winston Show.
Fun.
One of the children brought Winston to a Thanksgiving dinner and had all the parents introduce us to Winston back and forth as, like, part of the show.
So cool.
And so we get an email from mom and dad, like, well, this is the coolest thing ever. We had this crazy yellow banana talking to us at the Thanksgiving dinner. Like, that's great. and I, maybe the reason to talk about, you know, for kids or not, you asked earlier about Speak a Legend. We sort of chose to try to create for the 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old range because at that age, it's probably before you're playing Clash of Clans. It's probably before you found Instagram.
Yeah.
And you might still believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah. Believe it. You're not getting any presents.
So,
yeah.
At that place, children also, on the earlier side of that, have just sort of are developing the command of spoken language.
Yeah.
And for them, speaking is enjoyable in its own right. They just want to talk.
Right.
And so finding an audience that we can begin to create for in that space that wants to talk already is different than perhaps someone...
Yeah.
Of your sophistication, language-wise.
Well, and the demands. I mean, the kid's going to be happy, probably, you could say almost anything, in the fact that you're getting some response. The kids.
They'll at least give it a try.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to create a new form of art, a new form of media,
right.
What does it mean to create a personality
and
conversation?
Kids.
I need someone to talk back to me and give it a try. Right.
Yeah.
Give it a try. So that's why we chose to
Was the Winston Show the first one?
Yes. That came out about 15 months ago now. So last September, we launched that.
Innovative app for kids for 2013.
Yeah. Gave us a lovely... accolade there.
Editor's Choice. And it's free. You can download it right now.
Speaking of what, you just pulled up Ellington. Let's check this out.
What do you got?
There's an actual Ellington.
Oh, he's so
cute. Look at that. Yeah, right? There you go, Leah. There you go. You got one of those.
Can I have Ellington?
You can have that, yeah.
Oh, neato.
Nice.
That's great. So that's kind of, the truth is having worked at Pixar is a huge benefit for you because, I think there's a lot of technologists who could do something to this, but this also brings in character and animation and personality, and that's really hard to do. As hard as it is to do an AI, it's equally hard to do personality.
Well, thank you for broaching the topic at all. I mean that does make us a very unusual company to fund on Sand Hill Road.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because we are part technology and part content, and those things both exist in Toy Talk and kind of need to.
I want to show Speak a Legend, which is the current version. But how did Winston Show work? You would the kid would press a button and talk to Winston, or
so we use a metaphor kind of like Siri does. We have a hold to talk, like a walkie-talkie works.
Right.
And so, you know, hello, Winston, how are you? I'm fine. How are you doing? In this case, the Winston Show is sort of a skit-based variety comedy show.
There were new stories every week.
Yeah. So we did that. See, that show ran from September last year all the way through March.
So
this year. You can still, what you'll get now if you download The Winston Show is sort of what we call internally season two. So there are 4 or 5 episodes there, each one of which is more than half an hour to 45 minutes of playtime, back and forth, with the whole cast of characters you see there.
Are those in-app purchases? How does that work?
It's all free at this point in time. That
so you're just interested at this point in getting a foot in the door here.
Their product is offered at no charge.
Yeah, so everything's free. That's great.
Just as you did earlier today in the show, all parents have to give us consent to do this cover talking to kids.
And I should point that out because, and that's COPPA.
Yeah.
Anybody under 13 has to get parental permission. Otherwise, you can't gather information, even something as simple as talking back to them.
Right.
You can't have the microphone, can't even go on until you have parental permission.
In particular, any data that leaves at the particular mobile device and touches an internet-connected server.
Right.
Which, of course, we do speech recognition on the cloud. And
you're doing that.
So we ask parents for direct permission, and also that means so that we can share back with parents what their kids say, which is quite
That's kind of a fun part of the website, by the way, is you have... the best of editor's picks, you call them.
So
parents have sent you these?
So some parents get really, because there's kids say really funny stuff, you know, mail us or submit to us and say, hey, this is super fun. Put this on your site.
Which one should I play of the four you've got?
Oh, gosh. I think the elephant and the beaver.
Let's do the elephant
okay.
first.
Yeah, there you go.
So this is and by the way, the parent has sent this in and given permission. So this is... So first you're going to – actually, let me start over again. So first you're going to hear the Speak a Legend character talking. That's from you guys. And then there'll be a pause, and you'll hear the child's response.
That's right.
Can you turn it up a little?
I thought that going on a sleepover would be so stressful. Here I was thinking I'd never be invited on one. And now that I have been, it It's weird that at first I was too scared to even go. You know what I mean?
Now, that, by the way, that's a very interesting starting point for a kid. You've actually thought about these things that might be emotionally charged issues for kids, and you're giving them a chance to talk about that. In this case, it's a sleepover. I think that's really interesting.
So here I was thinking I'd never be invited.
You could talk over it because you've heard him.
We found that if we ask kids questions that are yes or no, or
here's the child's answer.
Yes, I do. I know you're scared, elephant, but there's nothing to be scared of. Pack your lily or another stuffed animal and pack a blankie and a pillow and
so this is a kid. This is real.
Yeah.
This is a kid talking back to this elephant, having this conversation.
Yep. I'm pleased to report, yes, it is. Yeah.
That's great.
Isn't that cool? I mean, right? Yeah. Now, this drives the speech recognition scientists completely crazy because that's free-form conversation.
Yes.
Right? And that's not the kind of data you typically get talking to a mobile personal assistant or not.
Right. Right? Well, but the good news is the elephant does not have to deal with what the kid says at this point. I mean, the elephant doesn't have to understand it and respond to it.
We have to understand it enough that the next thing the elephant says back makes sense in the conversation.
So you do.
Well, we'll do our best, but that is the challenge of natural language understanding.
That's really hard.
At the fully fledged, human conscious level.
Yeah.
I'll get to in 20 years from now. But
so the idea is you want to continue this, go back and forth for how long with the kid?
Well, as long as they want to talk to us, I suppose.
Continue,
but,
right?
But, okay, so it's not infinite. I mean, I guess on the Winston show, we tried to design the skits to be 5 to 7 to 8 minutes experiences each.
Yeah.
Here on... that's from Speakazoo. On Speak a Legend, which you have on your iPad, we expected the child's playtime to probably be, let's say, 5 to 10 minutes per character, I suppose. And what we find typically is kids will play with us for about 20 minutes or so, 30 minutes at a time, which is very long for mobile experience. But all that's really focused on conversation, two ways. And that lets us both... You asked a question earlier about the kind of topics we talk about.
I mean, that's a particularly interesting prompt. That's a psychologically deep prompt.
We found that, like I said before, yes or no questions or ABCs or things. Kids
are
yes or no, and who really cares? But when you ask how or why questions, now it begins a conversation for real. So really opening up to the things the kids want to talk about is what we're trying to learn as a writing team and a creative team to find out ways that they want to talk to us. When you do
no one has ever done this, right? I mean, this is... You're in uncharted territory here.
Yeah, we're off that edge at this point. Yeah.
Do you have a psychologist working with you on some of these?
We have a couple folks who are advisors in child psychology. Yeah. We talk to about what we do, but I think mostly it's just writing content and then next morning listening to what kids say back and then adjusting and changing.
So you do listen to them and see how it works.
Inside we do. That's why we get permission from parents to do that.
Yeah.
And that lets us improve the show. So this as a form of media, what's unique about conversation done this way in 2015, or 2014, I should say, or now, is that it's a cloud-connected service and has to be. There's no recognition on device you can do that will let you get anything close to what we can do on a cloud service.
No, you have to, yeah.
That also means that you're a live cloud service. And so for us, as the Winston Show was, or Speak a Legend is today, too, we tune the show day-to-day and can, in fact, minute-to-minute. So if we, as we first come out to market and we realize a bunch of kids are not getting a certain part or they're not going to this part of the show or not, we adjust the prompts, change the structure of that character's mind, and it's pushed back to AWS and Amazon's cloud and is live a second later. So it is very much not a film. When you finish a film, you go to theaters and you're done with it. This is much more like running a online
service.
Multiplayer service like Clash of Clans or World of Warcraft.
Right. Right.
So, or like a Broadway show, actually. So our work until we launch in the App Store is rehearsal. On day one, when Apple puts us in the App Store, a curtain goes up. And now you're doing the show every night again and again and again, which the individual audience member thinks is just Katz or Annie or the producers. In fact, that show's different every night.
Right.
Change the blocking, you change an actor comes in and out, you change the props as well too, because you're tuning the show live in market. That makes sense. We do that. That's what we do.
Wow.
So it is a service behind it. Both because it can be, but because it needs to be. We have to learn how to write and learn how to respond back. That is the creative discovery.
It's a lucky thing that the computers aren't smart enough and fast enough to do this.
Yeah.
It should be a cloud service because it is, it's a performance. I want to play it a little bit. Silicon Riot in our chat room wanted to know if you have any experience with autistic kids and these programs or developmentally challenged people.
I've had actually a very moving story. It was an anecdote shared, I think, by one mother. This is probably 3 months ago or so. So, late spring, so right, May or June. And her son is on the spectrum and was not vocal. And they got the Winston show for them on an iPad. And the child didn't really sort of watch it and didn't respond back. And after some time, when we get no response, we'll just keep going in the show and just sort of try to carry along. And then one day, said hello to Winston and then wouldn't stop talking. Just sort of turned on and that was it, which became too much. And so the parents now use the Winston show with their child as a way for sort of behavior rewards. And that was not a way we designed it at all. And that's not,
You're not making any therapeutic claims.
I can't because I don't, it's not my specialty. Right. I don't know a little about
boy,
that.
Boy, is that interesting.
It's very special when you hear that.
No kidding.
And also, to be fair, when a Pixar film comes out, hundreds of letters come into the studio about other children on different parts of the spectrum who connect in different ways to animated characters.
Yeah.
That can be hand-drawn, that can be CG, it can be 3D, it can be not. Yeah. The fact that even one child was affected that way made sort of the effort worth it,
That's so neat.
And, wow. I think when the time is right, the technology available that comes out of this has applications on the area.
Absolutely.
But that's obviously not Toy Talk's.
This is a toy. Policy. Right.
We're just trying to learn how to do this right the first time. But I appreciate the question.
Sure. Really interesting. Oren Jacob is our guest. He's the CEO of Toy Talk. I want to play with Speak a Legend. And we'll show you how it works a little bit in a second. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you finally will know where your money is, how it's working for you, how it's not working for you. You've got to plan ahead. I got to tell you, if you're going to buy a house, saving for a rainy day, and most importantly, investing for retirement, for your future. But a lot of times, we start with the best of intentions, but this stuff is hard. All the accounts, all your bills, everything on different websites all over the place, your investments, your bank account, your savings, your charge cards. It's impossible to see everything in one simple way. It's impossible to know if you're overspending. And then, you kind of forget about it. Maybe you don't pay as much attention to it as you ought to. Personal Capital really solves this. You're going to put everything into Personal Capital. This is free, by the way. Go to personalcapital.com/triangulation. You'll put all your accounts in there, and the first benefit immediately is you get this dashboard of how everything's doing, where everything is, what your assets are, what your net worth is, where your cash flow is going. It'll help you with budgeting. They actually can do budgeting with you, all sorts of stuff. But it also will then give you a sense of how things are progressing because you check in. In fact, they even have an Android Wear app, so your watch from time to time will say, hey, pay attention to this. And then it will tell you things like, are you overpaying for investment advice? Are you using the investment advice? It'll even give you investment advice if you need on asset allocation, planning, that kind of thing. Personal Capital is amazing. I've been using it for 2 years. We had its CEO, Bill Harris, on the show when he was just starting it. We were talking to him about his time at Intuit, where he was CEO, and PayPal, where he's CEO, and about money and about finance and authentication and stuff. And he said, hey, by the way, I got this Personal Capital thing you want to try. And I did. I love this. You got to try it free. personalcapital.com/triangulation. You can even get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. Personal Capital, total clarity and transparency so you can make better investment decisions right away. personalcapital.com/triangulation. If you haven't tried it yet, do it. Of course, they have apps for all the platforms, even for your wristwatch. I think that's pretty cool. That would be a watch app. Do you think about doing stuff for adults at all?
My ambition is to entertain all ages. We'll get there, but
yeah, we're starting here. This is what you're doing is pretty amazing. This is the jackal. Should we go to the beginning here? Tell me about Speak a Legend. This is Speak a Legend.
Just a quick answer to a bunch of stuff about...
The chat room's very interesting.
There's some Android version questions coming up here. Okay. Not today. Sorry, guys, but we are working on Android versions internally.
Is this easier to do on iOS?
Initial development kind of can be done either way. At the time, in 2011, when we started the company, that was a place probably to go to. Yeah. Certainly we'll support Android coming up soon. The device...
That's always a
challenge of Android is complicated, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
And it's also... soon. So.
No company has unlimited development funds. You have to make choices about where you're going to allocate your resources. It's just the way it is, and so you do it where you think. Probably more kids and parents have iOS devices, right? Even today. That's shifting.
It's shifting, and it's very different domestic versus international. It's very different.
That's a good point, too. Yeah.
Largely.
This is international, but it's English only, right?
Which is a funny question. I mean, I picked our discussion 10 minutes ago. When you internationalize a film or TV show, it's one way. Like, take the audio from the film and turn it into Mandarin or French or Spanish. In this case, there are two problems which multiply. One is our content has to go to, I'll pick Mandarin for a second, into Mandarin. Then you got to recognize Mandarin coming back, which is a whole different agenda.
It's like rewriting new software almost.
Yeah, so speech recognition has to get to a place where it can, and for adults, that is the case largely now. There are probably, if you talk to any of the major providers, Google being one of the best out there, Nuance, or what Siri can do, or stuff you see in Amazon.
They slowly roll out new markets. It takes a while.
They do, but they're probably in certainly over 20 or 30 now for adults, adult speech, under foreign languages. And that's really, when you look at North American English, it really has, you know, a lot of Spanish mixed into it, because it's a continent that's different than like English or a Canadian English, the case may be. But yeah, you can do Spanish, French, Hindi, Mandarin, Japanese, Korean, a bunch of languages now. Kids' speech recognition hasn't been done by anybody ever. Full stop.
Why is that?
Not done. No one had data to work with, because no one had any compliant way to get it at all.
So you're the first one to have a data set of kid voices.
That's right. And parents give us consent with our applications to use our children's recordings for the purpose of building recognition models for kids.
It says that explicitly. I have to say you're very good about that, explaining what you're doing and how you're using it.
Thank you.
Parents are informed before the kid does this. But that is an interesting side effect, is that you're going to have, you have some data sets no one else has.
That's right. But the purpose of those data sets, as I mentioned in our consent emails and the rest with parents, is to allow recognition providers to build acoustic and language models for kids. Yeah. That means that the previous questions going on about, can you create clinically relevant recognition examples for things as well, too? Well, no, because today we only recognize adult speech. So no. You have to get to recognize kids' speech first, at which point then a whole bunch of things open up, which that's one of them. Certainly language education, reading education, pronunciation, foreign language learning, all kinds of stuff comes out of that. But you have to have the basic recognition capability there to even begin to open that space up. So that's part of the journey Toy Talk is on, is to help that happen.
Here's the email I got when I started with Speak a Legend. Your kids, you could show my screen on the computer, Jason. Your kids want to play with Speak a Legend. We need your permission to play with Toy Talk apps. And then you really, I think, do a great job of explaining what's going on so the parent has a chance. And it's not, and then there's a big I give permission, but it's not the last conversation you have. You continue to send information. Here's an email I got from you. Thanks for joining the community. Your kid said something awesome this week. You send recordings out.
Well, we don't send a record. We send a link to the website, which is protected by a password authentication. So if you follow the link, you're back to toytalk.com.
Thank you for doing it right. That's right.
Only where you authenticate through, then you can see what your kid says only.
Yeah.
And then you may choose to delete that data or keep it around or do what you want to with it. But only you get access to that.
Let me play. I got to play the beaver here. This is the beaver.
See, this is exactly why I need to talk to you. It is just so impossible dealing with animals that aren't as smart as you are. Hey, I'm sure you run into this stuff all the time. How do you deal with humans who aren't as smart as you?
Well, did you know animals and other persons, they don't have to be as smart as someone else. Did you know everyone can be very different? It doesn't matter how you're made. It only matters if you're a nice person.
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry.
These are things
kids probably wouldn't say to even to any. I mean, this is a very intimate moment.
So I've been testing out now with hundreds of families in the Bay Area. When I drive, I go take our products as we're developing them and test in houses. And I've noticed there's sort of two sort of categories of behavior. For the particularly presentational child who likes to be noticed, likes to be loud and out there, they will almost always grab the iPad and just go for it in front of mom, dad, myself, two coworkers.
They're performing.
They're on. That's about maybe a half of kids.
Yeah.
About a third or a quarter of kids, they won't sign up for drama club. They tend to be not as presentational in their interest. Well, like, study it, let me try for a while, then kind of take it, and they'll leave quickly.
Yeah.
And they, down the hall, in the door, close the door.
Good.
Where'd they go? Well, they're going to go play in the room.
This is private.
Okay. So in that case, we ask the parents, we'll walk down the hall and kind of sit in the hallway.
And listen.
So take notes and listen and see. and they'll have a 20, 30 minute conversation, come out, I'm done, here you go, or not. It's
they wanted to go in private.
They want to take that to where they want to be in their space. And the fact that we can reach a child like that at all is a very special thing. We take that, you know, treat that very carefully. Yeah. But that is possible to reach that level of connection now with an authored experience this way, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
So,
Okay, I got my daddy's permission to play Speak a Legend. And so here, this is what you see, right? What should I do now?
Pick your favorite character. The Cyclops is quite fun to play with. All right. Bigfoot's pretty good too.
So I'm going to the Cyclops. Yeah. Now, this is all
Hello, hello. Oh, it's been so long since I had a little pet come and visit me, and you're the cutest puppy I ever saw ever, my little puppy. Hello, puppy, how are you?
Now, it's going to show a little... Right. And the kids pretty quickly grok that you press that to talk to it.
They do now, and that's been a very significant change in the last 3 years only. So when I first started the company, this was hopeless.
Yeah, what
and
do
I'd
you
be
do?
Like, it's like
kid
a walkie-talkie.
Looks at it.
Like a what? A walkie-talkie.
They start talking.
A what? A
what? Right.
All right, so...
kids don't have walkie-talkies.
Yeah, now, Apple had bought the startup Siri, which had the app Siri sometime earlier on, late 10 or early 11, and released it as part of iOS within a week or two of us starting to iTalk, this coincidentally. Within a year of that, by the late fall, late of 2012, early 2013, it went from 0 to 100% of kids understood that metaphor. And in the past 18 months, I have not met a child who does not heckle Siri endlessly. That is utterly pervasive at the grade school and younger level.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And all of us sitting here...
What a cultural change that is.
All of us above age 15 don't get this at all.
Like, so kids are already doing this with Siri.
Just because.
Because they could heckle them.
What's your favorite color?
Hi, Cyclops. I am not a pet.
See who does that one.
Oh, because I thought you were a cute little puppy. Yeah, because you have two arms and two legs and two eyes, just there like a cute little puppy. But that's okay if you aren't a puppy. Hey, you know what looks like a sheep because it is white, but it isn't a sheep because it's a horse with a horn on its head. Do you know what that is?
Is it a unicorn?
That's right. It is a unicorn.
And I'm getting stars here.
Yeah. So as you go through the conversation, we're going to reward you.
I am smart.
Once you get the
Did
first
you
night
ever
animals
see a unicorn before?
Happy and coordinated together, then you get to lock the unicorn.
Then I get to see the unicorn. So that gives us a goal.
Right. Now start touching the sheep and the rocks, too, which is super fun as well, too. All kinds of fun there.
My kids always...
It's nighttime.
Okay, so two things happened there that are actually quite relevant to talk about now. One was you're touching the screen with the sheep, which he did not comment about. The other one was the screen he does comment about. Then touch him on the belly button.
Oh, I have to talk.
Did you ever see a unicorn before? I haven't seen one, but I heard that if you're always nice and kind and not squeeze people too hard when you hug them, you'll make everyone very happy.
You can see how a kid would just dig the heck out of this.
I'm still working on the not squeezing hard part.
Do you hire actors? Where do you get these?
One of the main voice actors actually works with us at Toy Talk. He's also one of our writers named Dan Clegg, who's a local Shakespearean actor. He's great. And we also use Sarah and Chris Scott and a bunch of folks inside of Toy Talk as well. You can do his face and his arms as well, too. Try it around. There he goes, wiggle his ears.
Whoa! Yeah. He hit the sheep.
If you get the grass, it's to the screen left of his foot there. You get another sheep to come walking in. There's the black sheep. Kind of like that one. Yep.
Who is that black sheep? Do kids learn?
Well, you should definitely say that. Then you will be best friends with a unicorn and fly away into a rainbow, and I'll cry out of my one eye and be sad because I will miss you. But then you can wave down at me, and I'll look really, really small to you, so that will make me laugh.
Nice. So what I was commenting on before was the combination
Okay, we could silence the ogre, the Cyclops.
The combination of touch and talk actually is also an undiscovered country. So if you and I are at dinner, and we're talking over dinner, and I drop a fork, you probably don't say anything, and I go pick it up and carry on with the meal.
Yeah.
We're talking at dinner, and the lights go out.
Yeah.
Blackout. What happened?
Right.
Okay. That interrupted your conversation.
Right.
So now how do you handle interrupts? If you're talking to a Cyclops, and you're touching the sheep, or changing the night to day, or touching him with a club or his body or not, if you're like, hey, Leo, can we talk for a minute?
Right.
That's very different than if I'm like, hey, Leo, what's going on?
Yeah.
So the notion of how you interrupt conversation, where it goes after the interrupt, how do you thread back to where you were before, that's very complicated bit of business, both from an interface point of view, like touch and microphone involved.
Absolutely.
And from a software design and creative point of view as well. You'll notice that the digital assistants, Siri, Cortana, Google Now, and the rest, don't present a character on screen.
Right.
Well, I mean, Cortana does, to you know who she is because of the video game reference. Right. But like Siri and Google Now are just an audio waveform and a black
screen. You know, it's interesting. Microsoft says the reason Cortana has a visual appearance is in Asia, they expect it.
And there's often this meme that, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, Korea, Japan, and China, where we're going to be now.
So right.
They're 10 years ahead of us.
Right.
The notion of a digital personality, like as a rock star, is pervasive in Japan.
Yep.
She's off touring.
Theodoro, see. A friend of mine just saw her recently.
She was,
performed.
She came to L.A.
Yeah.
It's a live backup band, but she's
She's a hologram.
Right.
And it's like real-ish.
Ish. Well, has a huge fan base. And
aren't we in interesting times? And you really in the cutting edge, the foreground of this. Do you ever, now this is an entertainment product, but do you ever want to introduce some educational elements? Even things like simple things like how to converse and...
Absolutely, but to get like didactically relevant, you probably need speech recognition to be at an accuracy place you can give the lesson that you intend to give.
Yeah.
And as recognition rates get better, absolutely, that there isn't, to my knowledge, no satisfactory like language learning, you know, digital offering that involves you actually recognizing speech back and forth at this kind of level.
Not yet.
That I've seen out there.
But boy, would that be valuable. Something like Duolingo with this technology, and it would be hugely impressive and interesting.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Maybe relatively soon,
this
but not
This is a big
today.
Step. Speaker Treat, Speak a Legend, Speak a Zoo, and The Winston Show are the four apps right now. You can find out more at toytalk.com. We've got its CEO and founder, Oren Jacob, with us. We'll wrap it up in just a minute, but first... it's time for me to tell you a little bit about smart things. We're talking about smart kids. Let me show you some smart things. You want your house to be smarter. That's the next thing, too, to be able to talk to the house. That would be awesome. And you know what? Smart things is getting us a long way there. This was a Kickstarter to create this. And they raised the money a couple of years ago and did a great job of it. What is this? This is the smart things hub. Got an Ethernet jack, a USB port. It works on the Wi-Fi, but the key to this is it doesn't just understand the smart things protocol. It understands a lot of other smart things like your Philips Hue lights or your Sonos music player, your drop cam, your Nest, your Schlage locks, your quick set locks. It is the hub that connects all the other Internet of Things devices in your house. And of course, smart things makes a whole bunch of their own little doohickeys that talk to the smart things hub. Like the Smart Sense Multi, which can tell you when things open or close, when valuable items move. It knows the temperature in the room. This thing, the presence, is awesome. You put this in your kid's backpack, it knows when they come and when they go. Or you put it on keys, and it knows when they come and when they go. So what happens here is you get started. This is the moisture sensor. This would be great. You put this in the basement, and you know if you could stop a small leak from becoming a major flood. This is the temperature and humidity sensor. The thing to do is go to smartthings.com/twit, and you're going to see the solution kits and the home security kits. And that's where you should start, because that gives you the sense of, okay, I'm doing this thing, whether it is, turning on lights outside when somebody comes in your area or in your motion controller. We're going to save you 10% off of any home security or solution kit. Just use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. And by the way, SmartThings just announced they're going to start working with Samsung appliances in 2015. So you can control a refrigerator, a washer, a dryer, an air conditioner. They even have a robotic vacuum. So the SmartThings universe is getting bigger and bigger all the time. They have apps. They're free for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. Yes, Windows Phone. And they work with If This Then That. If you're a developer, you can create new ways to use SmartThings and publish them yourself for everyone to use. You can even trigger the sound of dogs barking on your Sonos when somebody comes in the house. All right?
That's awesome.
All right? Or maybe get a Cyclops. Say, hey, what are you doing in there? I see you with my one eye. SmartThings.com/twit. 10% off home security or solution kits. By the way, this would be a great holiday gift for a geek in your life. or your spouse who's been saying for a long time, I just wish I could have it. The garage door would come up when I arrive and the lights would come on and the music would come on and my coffee pot would start up. SmartThings.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT10. You'll save 10%. Oren Jacob is here. He's CEO and founder of Toy Talk, toytalk.com. We've been playing a little bit with Speak a Legend, talking also about your amazing work at Pixar. You did Finding Nemo, too. Is Lucy a Finding Nemo fanatic? I bet she is.
I don't know how many times we've seen it.
Yeah,
too many
thousands.
To count. Yeah.
Over and over.
Pretty much any Pixar. She's
an
aficionado.
Yeah, but there's something about Nemo that kids
Nemo connects with completely.
I don't know what it is. I guess it's the same thing that Speak a Legend does. There's something about the characters in there that particularly speaks to kids. Or maybe it's a story. I don't know what it is. But
hopefully all those things, I suppose.
All of it, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what's maybe going on forward in Toy Talk in the months to come.
I'd love to know what you're planning.
So I, about half an hour ago, kind of mentioned the tool set we have internally we call Pull String, which lets us create Speak a Legend in the shows we do.
Yeah.
So we announced actually a few weeks ago a relationship with Sesame Street, formally. And so
that's exciting.
Yeah, we are partnering with them to research the impacts of speech recognition and language understanding.
Children's television workshop.
Yeah, for sure. So that's very cool, and I hope is a sign of things to come with other partners. There are a lot of characters in the world that I think kids want to talk to, and I think that Toy Talk will really sort of reach its potential as a company if a whole lot of kids are talking to a whole lot of characters, and a bunch of them are ours. But
I could see this.
Well too,
I could see this in games as well, though. It doesn't have to be just that thing. It could be part of a larger universe of non-player entities.
Absolutely.
That, you know,
to get to vocal conversation that way would be also a spectacular reach as well. So yes, hopefully back here, a year from today, we can talk more about.
I think that's a guarantee. I'm really excited.
Those developments, but yeah, there's a lot of interest now by other third party companies who see what we've done with our apps as well too, and say, can I make my characters talk back? And
well, you have a data set that is of real value. And now, you're probably not allowed to kind of sell it to a third party.
And I don't. I asked the permission I get from parents is to use it to improve our products
your
only,
stuff.
And to build recognition. Speech recognition or natural language processing for children, for spoken language.
Right.
And it's for that express purpose only, which is what we need it for.
Right. Good luck finding it on the iTunes store, as I was mentioning before the show. Apple doesn't make it easy, but if you search for Toy Talk or Speak a Legend, you'll find it here. It is free, right?
Speak a Legend actually is a $3 download.
$3,
so it's
okay.
Mm-hmm.
But Winston is free.
Winston's free. Speakazoo's free.
Okay.
Speak a Legend is $3 and a Speaker Treat we did for Halloween, which is a very fun jack-o'-lantern barbershop quartet bit that I'm quite a fan of.
I really like that one. That was a lot of fun. But this is really worth it. And I think I'd be really interested if your kids use it. 4 to 8, you think, is the best age?
I think that's about right, yeah.
Yeah. If your kids use it, I'd love to hear what their reaction is to it. You find some kids just go, it doesn't move me.
In Speakazoo, that happened for us. In Speak a Legend, because you can both talk and touch, the play pattern is different.
Yeah.
You get some kids that are heavy tappers and want to play with the sheep, throw the rocks
like
and the rest
tapping.
And that.
My kids always loved that because they played all those living books from Broderbund.
Other kids are heavy talkers and are like, sheep, whatever. I'm just going to talk to the Cyclops, take them to the mat. And then some kids in the middle. So
I wish Henry and Abby were young enough to use this because I'd love to see what they would do with this.
It'd be fun.
I need some children, please.
Maybe someone in the audience can help Leo out with that agenda.
No! Grandchildren will happen soon enough. And by the time Henry and Abby have grandchildren, I'd be very curious where this technology has gone.
Yeah.
Oren, it was really great to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Leo. Yeah.
ToyTalk.com. Oren Jacob, he's the CEO. You can find out more at ToyTalk.com. Get links to the apps there, too. That's the other way you can
absolutely,
do it.
For sure.
And that makes it perhaps the easiest way to do it. And do you tweet often at Oren Jacob? Or?
I do, upon occasion, yeah. And people say hi to me. I'm happy to say hi back as well and talk to them back and forth.
Good.
And Toy Talk also is an active social media network as well, too. So Twitter and Facebook on Toy Talk as well.
Oh, good. All right.
If you want to talk to the characters, talk to Toy Talk. If you talk to me, talk to me. But
great.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Or get Speak a Legend.
Right.
They'll talk back to you.
For as long as you want.
Thank you, Oren. Really nice to meet you.
Thanks, Leo.
Really appreciate it. We do Triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. If you can be here for it live, I really appreciate it because it's only Triangulation when I get those great questions from the chat room. But if you can't, don't worry because we make on-demand audio and video available after the fact always at twit.tv/TRI. or you can go to youtube.com/triangulation. You can get them there. Share, that's a good way to share it if you want to share it with friends. Hey, you got to, if you know somebody with kids that age, send them a link to this because I think they're going to be interested in this. You can also subscribe. That's probably the best way because every triangulation has something of, I think, of great interest, of fascination. Last week, we talked about landing on Mars and the future of Mars exploration with the guy behind the Curiosity rover. Next week, Ben Heck is our guest. We're going to talk about making and his great show. So there's always something. Triangulation. Find it on your favorite podcatcher and subscribe, and that way you'll get it each and every week. Thanks to Jason Howell, our technical director, and to Karsten Bondi, our producer, for putting together this show. And thanks to you for being here. I'll see you next week on Triangulation. Bye-bye.